Why do relationships fail? When I ask people what's the biggest issue in your relationship, they almost always answer, we don't communicate. That's wrong. Yeah, I said it. And that wrong answer has you working on the wrong things. You've done it. You've tried out all those communication tools to improve your relationship, but they don't work. And you know why? Because you're not treating the real problem, the cancer. You're treating a symptom, which means you don't get to the root of the issue. So the problems keep coming back and ultimately your relationship fails. Today, I'll explain the top three reasons relationships fail. And as always, tips to help you create lasting connection, ease, and joy in your relationship. So stay tuned. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, and I'm a practicing psychologist, number one Amazon best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and all-around relationship maven with over 35 years of experience helping people just like you. Join me as I teach you actionable tips and strategies to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast. We are on to one of my favorite topics, and we are getting close to the end of season six. 6 years I've been doing this. I will be taking a break, which I do every year. For this time, I'm going to be taking 3 weeks this summer off. So I think we go through episode, this is 295, we go through 296, and then I'll have 3 weeks off, and then I'll be back for 297 and season seven. Yeah. All right, so let's get to it. I mean, we all start out with those in love feelings, right? So where does it all go wrong? And let me say first that relationships are complex. They are diverse. So even saying that there are only, you know, three reasons relationships fail is kind of on its face a little crazy. I know that, you know. I'm trying to grab your attention. I'm not going to lie with the titles, but I am also trying to condense information because it's so complex and so huge. It's really impossible to anyone who says these are the only reasons, but these really are to me the main reasons. I really am breaking it down for you, you know, but there are so many factors that contribute to a relationship eroding, right? So yeah, lack of communication, poor conflict resolution, if you've had previous trauma or your partner has, your attachment styles, if there's been infidelity and trust or trust issues, and not feeling supported by your partner, financial problems, if there's a lack of intimacy. I mean, the list goes on, right? There's a ton. And I do not mean to demean or dismiss any of those real reasons. My point today is that, yes, these are all reasons relationships fall apart, but they're actually what I would call the top reasons. These are the symptoms that pop up when the real problem isn't being addressed, okay? So infidelity is a symptom in the same way that a fever can be a symptom of some kind of cancer, right? If you focus on the fever, you'll never move forward because that fever will keep showing up because you haven't figured out or addressed the cause of the fever, which again is could be cancer. So yeah, that fever is hard to ignore and might feel life-threatening on its own, but if you only work on lowering the fever, that symptom or issue will keep occurring. In fact, think about it. As that cancer grows unchecked, other symptoms will likely pop up. You know, it won't just be a fever anymore. It'll be other things, right? So yes, if you have, of course, unresolved trauma from your past, yeah, of course it shows up in your adult relationships. I've covered this at length in previous episodes, which I will link to. I always let you know that everything is linked either below the video. If you're watching me on YouTube, please subscribe and like and leave a comment. I love to answer the comments if you know, and say hi. They're also linked on the website, abbymedcalf.com. I always have a corresponding blog for all the episodes. I would say of the almost 300 episodes I've done, maybe there's 10 that don't have a corresponding blog, you know, because they were interviews or something else. But otherwise, I always put out a blog post too, so that if you're listening right now and you don't want to take notes, or, you know, you're wondering about something, you can just go look at the blog post later. And it's not a transcript. It's an actual blog post that I write. So, and I will put the links for all the research, all the episodes I mention, all the videos, whatever I say, any link you need will be under the video on YouTube, will be on my website, on the podcast page, or on the blog under the relationship tips and tools page. So there's a lot of places for you to get what you need. All right. So yeah, as I was saying, if you have trauma, yeah, you need to work on your trauma, right? Of course. But these three reasons I'll discuss with you today have likely been a part or a byproduct of your earlier trauma. And, you know, resolving trauma encompasses a very large scope and may take years. So what you can do, you know, what can you do in the meantime? You can focus on these three issues and at least put those to rest. And I will tell you this, because I've had clients, obviously, you know, I still work with clients, which I think sets me apart from a lot of people, because I'm not just talking about the research. I'm also talking about what I know works with my clients. I will tell you that this mindset shift we're going to be talking about today goes a long way to resolving your trauma and strengthening all your relationships. Again, especially that relationship with yourself, which is the most important one. So I really want to say that. So if you're looking at the real reason relationships fail, you know, again, you've got to look a little deeper. Okay. So let's get to the reasons. There's three I'm going to talk about today. Reason number one is competition and keeping score. Now, I have a TEDx where I talk all about the real reasons reason relationships fail. And I do go into this there. So if you haven't watched my fabulous TEDx yet, you know, it's time. I say it there and I'm saying it now. It's not communication. That's not the real reason relationships fail, as most people think. So there's, again, something underneath that. There's a reason the communication and trust breaks down. And again, it's really this competition and keeping score. You compete and keep score in your relationships. And that's the reason you get resentful. It's why you feel disconnected. It's why you get upset. And there are a lot of ways to keep score. Okay, so I want to say that. So we say things like, you know, my favorite, what do I always say if you've listened to me before? It's your turn to put away the dishes. You know, if you're taking turns in your relationship, we're in some trouble. You know, I took kid one to baseball practice on Tuesday, so you need to take kid two to piano practice on Thursday. You know, you went out with your friends on Friday, and so I get X amount of time on Saturday. You spent money on this, so I get to spend money on that. I made dinner, you need to do the dishes. I make the money, so your job is the kids in the house. You right? It's all this keeping score. So, and of course, you keep that running list in your head. And I know some of you even do this on paper because I've talked to you. It's okay. I love you anyway. Right? You've gotten that petty that you're literally keeping a list on paper. I say with love, but it's a problem. So, you know, you keep a list of all the things you're doing and you're comparing it to the running list you keep of the things your partner is or isn't doing. And of course, your list is always better and longer of all the things you do and whatever and how much you show up. And tell me, I'll give you a little scenario. This scenario I hear in many ways from my clients. Okay. Something like this. And it's a lot of keeping, it's how keeping score shows up on the daily. You've set up the carpools for the kids for the week. You've shopped for and started preparing dinner, right? And this was difficult because, you know, little Jimmy has a recently diagnosed gluten allergy and you're trying to deal with that. You've emailed back and forth all day about some things you need to do for a work meeting on Wednesday. You stopped and picked up maybe your partner's dry cleaning. You scheduled a guy to take down the big tree whose roots have made your driveway, you know, look like a skate park, right? Okay. Then your partner gets home a little early from work or their business trip or being out all day or whatever, and thinks it's a good idea to sneak in some sex before you have to go pick up the kids from their respective sports practices, right? You're exhausted already and still you're thinking, oh, got a full night. I got to finish dinner. There's homework. There's baths. There's more emails. And you've managed your time down to the second to get all that done. And you didn't, of course, factor in sex with your partner because who knew they were going to come home early from wherever they were. And then, of course, you rebuff their advances and they complain. Oh, you never want to have sex anymore. You don't make time for me. And then you're pissed and you quickly start to tick off your long list of all the things you've done today. Oh my God, you want sex and I've done this and this and this and you didn't do that and you haven't done this. Who else is supposed to do this? Because I'm the only one left, right? And I know you've done this. Maybe it's not this exact scenario, but it's something like this. I'm guilty of it too. Please don't think I live in some perfect castle somewhere because I know this stuff. You know, knowing what to do and doing what you know are not always the same thing. But I will say I do try to practice what I preach, and it is why I'm pretty happy in my relationships. But I've learned this over the years, right? And again, I tell you, never do something because you think I'm so perfect in doing it. It's because of my experience and all the research. That's always what I bring you. And I just happen to practice it in my own life. I'm smart enough to see what works and go, oh, I should do this too. So I'm just saying that. But so you've done something like this, right? Your partner just tells you something they need. But instead of listening, you get defensive. You start ticking off that long list of things you've done or giving them all the reasons, here's my favorite, that they shouldn't feel that way. This is keeping score. This is competition. You've got your scorecard. It is full. And so you think you're covered. I've done all my things. I have everything checked off my list. Well, you're not. You're not covered. And once again, this kind of competition puts you in a loser's position. If it was up to your partner, they'd rather you ordered in a pizza, the kids went to bed slightly stinky, and the two of you had a couple of orgasms together, right? Your list means nothing to them. The things on your list are all about what you deem important and necessary. I'm not saying that the things you want to do aren't real, aren't worthy, don't quote unquote need to be done, but it doesn't mean that you're right and they're wrong. It's truly amazing to me that so often, and I see this because I've had it in my own life. I've had, you know, clients tell me this. I've seen it and I've done a couple sessions where people are doing it right in front of me. It is amazing that so often our partners tell us what they need and then we end up telling them they're wrong, right? I had this recently where a wife was telling her husband, you know, I want to spend more time with you. And the husband answers, we spend tons of times together. We watched TV together last night. We did this on Friday. We went out to dinner on Thursday. Right? And we did this and this. And so they end up listing all the ways you spent time instead of listening to what maybe you said, right? And again, this goes both ways, where you said, because you have to think about that. Well, but to me, that's not spending time together when we are watching a show side by side and you're on your phone half the time. That's not spending time, you know, but the definition that someone else holds of spending time, right, is the same, is that. Do you see see what the problem is? So the fighting back and forth about how wrong you both are is not the conversation to have. And that is why relationships fail. You're not really listening to each other. And you're creating disconnection. It doesn't matter what you have or haven't done. It matters how you or your partner feels. So instead of listing all the things you've done or telling them that they're wrong, ask questions. Your immediate response whenever you get feedback should only be one thing, and that is to ask a question and not make a statement. What do I say all the time, right? Don't sack your relationships, SAC. Don't offer suggestions, give advice, or criticize. Instead, you should be asking questions. And I understand that it could feel like they're criticizing you, right? You never want to have sex anymore. Sure, that's a criticism. I do not like that that to me is not feedback. That's just sort of yelling, you know, telling you how wrong you are. And I hate, of course, I hate the always and the never language. Of course, it's ridiculous. I'm sure you've probably had sex in the last few weeks, maybe, I hope. But, you know, either way, it doesn't matter when it comes at you that way. So again, we want to ask what I always have called collaborative questions. And I will give you a list. I'm writing this down so I don't forget. Hold on. I have a list of collaborative questions if you haven't downloaded them yet. I will link to those on all the places I said I link to things, where you can get a list of collaborative questions. But they're questions that don't have a yes or no answer, basically. So if someone gave you the feedback, you know, you never want to have sex anymore, you know, instead of saying, what are you talking about? We had sex twice last week and blah, 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 you know, because it just gets crazy. What they're really saying, of course, is that they don't feel like their needs are met, or they don't feel heard, or you don't feel listened to, right? You're saying something else generally, what's under that. So instead of again, ticking off all the reasons they're wrong, or having a debate, which is all in your head, you know, that's all in your head. You want to get to the heart. So even if they're saying something you really disagree with, you can say, can you tell me more about that? And you have to ask with a loving heart. Okay. You can't ask in a pissy way. Oh yeah. Well, tell me more. Like, tell me exactly, you know, don't do that. You need to really want to know the answer. You have to be curious. I did an entire episode on curious. Again, I'll link to that in the show notes. I just wrote it down so I don't forget. I did a whole episode on how curiosity will save your relationship, but you really do need to be curious. So can you tell me more about whatever that is? Can you tell me more about what you mean when you say we never have sex? Because I know, you know, we had sex twice last week. So let's talk about it. Like tell me more about how it feels that way for you. You don't want to ask why questions. Why are you saying that? Why do you feel that way? Don't ask it. Why questions put people on the defensive. But can you tell me more about, you know, what do you mean, you know, how, where, you know, those kind of questions are really great. You might say, depending on what they ask for, can you give me, you know, I have to say, I'm having a hard time understanding what you're saying to me. I really feel differently. So come on, give me one or two specifics about when I've done X or Y or whatever they're talking about. That's another way you can collaboratively ask. You might say, well, if you knew, you know, you don't prioritize me. Well, okay. And you think of all the ways you prioritize them, right? You're thinking of the whole list. But again, that they're not, it doesn't matter what you're doing. It matters what they're feeling. Again, and this applies to you too. I'm not saying it doesn't, but you're the one listening. So we're going this way. So you might say, well, okay, I feel like I prioritize you a lot and I don't want to list those things, but I want to hear from you. If you knew I prioritized you, what kinds of things would I be doing? Or what kinds of things would I be saying? And then don't just rebut, because they might say, well, you'd be saying thank you for, you know, whatever. And you're like, I just said thank you yesterday. You know, don't go there. Just listen. And then you can come back again with a question like, wow, that's so crazy to me. I feel like I say thank you a lot and you don't hear that. What do you think that is? Let's talk about that. Is there a different way I can do it? Because I can literally think of five times in my head where I said thank you in the last couple of days, but you didn't hear it. And that's what matters. So I'm trying to figure out how we can connect on this, how you can know how much I really do appreciate that you do X, Y, or Z, because I do. But if you don't feel it, that's a problem. So let's talk about it. Do you see where I'm going here? Do you see how you're leaning into a conversation instead of leaning out? It's okay. This is where the vulnerability lies. This is where the trust gets built. And this is where closeness happens. If I could do one thing right now to let you know I hear you, what would that be? You know, if they say you don't hear me, like there, you want to really ask at the beginning, you have to ask from a loving heart. You have to ask with really being curious. What do I say all the time? You have to listen like you're wrong. Your partner is trying to communicate something and you shutting down the conversation ends with everyone feeling frustrated, everybody feeling distant. It get you nowhere. And I can hear you groan right now. I know exactly what you're thinking. How do you like that? Yes, Abby is reading your mind. The great Carniak. What did Johnny Carson used to do? That's how old I am. I remember Johnny Carson. he used to do this like where he could read people's minds. Anyway, I can hear you groaning right now, but what about me? When is it my turn? That's keeping score. The issue is that your partner is picking up on that energy, and that's why they're not stepping up in the way you want, okay? So there is a piece of information I repeat a lot on this podcast that really, I say it in the TED Talk, I say it in a lot of places, and this will change your life. It's research from Timothy Wilson, who I always quote. He's one of my crushes in the research world. We know from the research that your conscious brain processes information at a rate of 40 bits per second, while your unconscious or subconscious brain processes information at a rate of 11 million bits per second. So your partner doesn't hear what you say, they hear what you mean. So when you're doing the nice thing, but in your head, you're that other piece is like, oh, when's it going to be my turn? How long do I have to do this? This isn't fair. This is going on too long. Any of that, that's what they're picking up on. Every time they pick up on that energy. And you know it because you've done it. You've gone to a meeting or something and someone's saying all the right things at a meeting, but you think they're full of crap. You're like, that person's full of shit. I don't know what they're doing, but they're full of crap. Guess what? That is those 11 million bits that you're picking up on. That they're not being truthful on some level. There's some, I call it a wobble. There's like a wobble. You know, they're saying one thing, but the energy is different. You don't realize that that's what you're picking up on. But again, this is the science. I'm not talking about the secret and law of attraction and all that, although I do believe in that, not the way the secret is, but because I know this research. So it is real. Okay. There's, again, if you want to read Leary's research or his book, Strangers to Ourselves, highly recommend it. It's a thick read. I'm not going to lie, but it's brilliant. And all the research is in there. Malcolm Gladwell loves him too, by the way. So if you don't believe me and you like Malcolm Gladwell, there you go. He has another book called Redirect, which is also incredible. Timothy, he's your guy. Anyway, so that's what's happening. You're putting out that energy of keeping score that, yes, I'm being nice for a certain amount of time, or I think this is unfair, but I'm going to do it anyway. Your partner picks up on that. You have to go in with a full heart. I don't know what else to tell you. You have to suspend disbelief. You have to believe we are going to work through this. This relationship is what I want. I love this person. I'm going to make this work. We are going to be happy. We are going to be connected. And I am going to be here in full loving force. You have nothing to lose. This idea I'm going to get taken advantage of is such bullshit. It makes me insane. Again, if that's all you think the whole time you're in a relationship, that is what the subconscious, that is the 11 million bits that person is picking up on. And they're like, screw you. I'm not trying to take advantage of you. Because they have their list, remember? They're keeping score too. I do all these things. How could they possibly think that? That's what's happening. It is, if you're with a true narcissist, which very few of you really are, truly someone who's truly, really mentally ill, then yes, that's probably 1% of you listening. Then okay, there's something different. But the vast majority of you, this is not you. Okay, this is not you. You I know you call your partner a narcissist, or they're borderline, they're this, they're bipolar. I hear you diagnosing all the time. Thank you, WebMD degree. No. I have real degrees and I got 40 years of experience. And even I have a hard time sometimes telling, because that's how hard it is to really know. I know we try to make it so easy and, you know, just these three things. And then, you know, if the person's a narcissist, it's not true. There's so much context involved. I mean, we can teach you some things, but, you know, at the end of the day, there's something else. So I just really need to say that. Okay. I'll get off my soapbox, but I need you to hear that you have to go in with a whole heart. And I also, you know, I want to say this too, as part of this, that this is really included in this keeping score idea, or the competition, that you're right to want what you want. Okay. And your partner isn't wrong if they want something different. So there's no right or wrong. There are only preferences.
If you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
So, you know, it's not right to want more sex. It's not wrong to want less sex. It's not right, you know, to want to save more money than spending money. By the way, everybody's a spender. I hate that. Well, I'm a spender. She's a saver, you know? Like, no, everybody spends money. It's just a case on what you spend it on. And these ideas that, again, this right and wrong, that some things are frivolous or not needed when other, you know, that's that, nope, nobody's right here. Nobody's right. It's not right to want to save more money than spend. You know, it's not right to want your kids to go to private school and wrong if you want them to go to public or vice versa. It's not right to want your kids raised a certain religion. It's not wrong to clean the pots and leave a couple of food scraps behind. I know people are going to argue that. I'm going to get comments under the video, but it's not. It's not right to clean the counters in a certain way. If I told you how many arguments I have to listen to about the counters not being cleaned properly. When we decide something is right or wrong, instead of looking at it as a preference we have, we get into big trouble. Because really, you're telling your partner that they're wrong over and over for not doing things your way. So, right? What if you could come away from the right wrong and again, instead ask questions to learn more about your partner's point of view? What if you saw your differences as diversity and thought about what you're gaining from these differences? I will tell you that, and this happens a lot, especially if you're raising kids together, we generally tend to parent differently. That's just sort of how it goes. And so it can feel like one way is right and one way is wrong. I remember my kid's dad used to swing them around by their arms. Made me crazy, people. I was like, I just made that. Please stop swinging it. Okay. And things like that. Or he used to, actually, the thing that really drove me nuts, he used to tease my kids. He would tease them. And I have, being the youngest with older siblings who teased me quite a bit, my brothers especially, teased me a lot. And I hated it. It would make me cry. It was very upsetting to me to get teased. And so it was really triggering for me watching their dad tease my kids. And we had lots of talks about it. And, you know, his point of view was, hey, when they go out in the real world, people are going to tease them. And they need to know how to roll with it. They need to know how to act, not react. If they never get that, here at home, they're, you know, it's not all, he was a very loving dad. My kids have a wonderful father. And my former husband is a wonderful former husband still to me, very loving, kind, connecting. And he had these different viewpoints about certain things. And so it, you know, his idea is that's really good for the kids. It's really good for the kids to be in these kinds of situations. You know, it's sort of like I used to, my son wanted to paint his nails when he was really little. And I was like, sure. And I painted his nails. And I remember we came home, he was like four. And their dad came home and he was upset. He was like, I don't like his nails painted. That doesn't feel good to me. He's never been homophobic or anything. I don't know where that came from. But we had to have a talk about it. And of course, he like let it go. He was like, oh, I don't know why I was upset. I'm not sure what I was thinking. He was worried. Isn't that funny? When we got to it, he was worried he was going to get teased at his little preschool. I was laughing. I was like, you tease them all the time here. What are you talking about? And he started laughing and then it went, you know. But sometimes people have these reactions that seem weird, right? So he's the one teasing them and then he's worried they're going to get teased. That's why you care about the nail painting, you know. But guess what? We're complex creatures. We don't always, you know, it's not always so easy. Of course, when he was teasing them, he was in control, knowing he loved them and he was going to be kind. It felt very different to him. So, you know, but again, if you can have conversations and not get defensive and angry and upset, you can actually really get somewhere. You know, you can really have a great connection on the other side instead of feeling disconnected about it. So, and diversity, we know in business, is always a good thing. We're always looking for more diversity. Diversity is great. It really, it's more ideas. It's more productive. There's so many good things about diversity. So, hello, diversity in styles at home. And I know in your head, you're thinking, oh, please, Abby, leaving food scraps in the pot. How is that okay? How is that ever right? Well, it just is. That other person, it's not a preference for them to care that much. That same that partner of yours might pick up the pot with some food scraps, might wipe them off before they fill it with water to boil water for pasta or something. I don't know, but, or might not, and let them float around. Are you going to die from it? Probably not. So, you know, just some things are important to some people and some things are important to others. It doesn't make it right or wrong. So if you can get to the idea that this is a preference my partner has, this is a preference I have, it really changes the game. And again, you want to ask questions. And I'm going to say a final thing before I go to reason two, because it's all connected. I want you to see problem solving with your partner as a triangle, not a line. I've said this on the podcast before, and it's pretty big. Okay. Again, this is the reason relationships fail. You have a problem and you think it's a line. So I'm here on point A, you're there on point B, and we're trying to compromise along this line. That's where you get into trouble, because that's how you keep score. Well, but this and this is right. No, this and this is right. No, this and this is right. And then you're trying to convince the other person. And what we know is that both of you end up feeling like you, even if you're arguing about public versus private school, let's say for your kid, and you want public and they want private, but you end up in private, your partner still feels funky about that. It does, even though they quote unquote got their way, they don't like that you're not really on board. You're not really with them on it. So nobody walks away feeling great, believe it or not, maybe in the moment, but that dis-ease keeps happening. So, and you're holding it maybe too, like, oh, I can't wait till something bad happens at the school and I'm going to say, see, I told you so, right? Whatever. Or the money, they're going to complain later about the tuition and say, we can't go on vacation because we have to pay this private school tuition. You're like, oh my God, it's what I was talking about. Why are we doing, you know, and the problem keeps coming over and over. So what you have to do instead is see problem solving with your partner as a triangle. Okay. So the triangle. So you're both at the base of the triangle. You're at point A and they're at point B, right down on the base, those two corners of that triangle. But you're looking up, not at each other, but forward towards a solution that maybe you haven't even thought of yet. So you're looking up to the tip of that triangle is the solution. And what that entails is brainstorming and asking a lot of questions. So again, tell me more about. First of all, let's brainstorm a list of all the ways our kids could be schooled. Let's use this example. All the ways our children could be in school. They could learn on a boat in the middle of the Pacific. We could both quit our jobs and travel the world, and they could live in different countries and learn things. We, you know, they could go to a school that's religious, right? Versus a regular private school, you know, secular versus non-secular. We could, they could go to a charter school. We could start a school. We could homeschool. I mean, think of a crazy list of things, even if you would never, ever do them. Okay. Just every possibility there is, because you start to see it's from that creative process that the juices start to flow, because you're working from a different side of your brain. You are no longer in that amygdala fear-based, you know, fight, flight, or freeze. You are now in problem solving, creativity, all that good stuff starts to happen, and you're asking questions. Tell me more about private school. I really want to hear all what, and again, listen like you're wrong. Go in looking to learn something, not prove something. what is it that's so special to you about this? And when you're willing to do that, people get vulnerable. So you might hear from your partner, you know, I always felt outside of. Maybe you yourself went to private school and you hated it. And that's why you can't imagine it for your kids. Because you always felt teased or bullied or something. Like, you get to talk about this stuff. Oh, maybe your partner grew up poor and private school to them seems like some holy grail. Or maybe they're embarrassed at work because everybody's kids go to private school and they want to be able to say the same thing. Like, you just need to, and you don't have to dispute it when you hear it. Oh, you're just trying to look good for other people. Like, stop that. Don't judge. Remember, don't criticize. Right? We're just asking questions. So when you treat it like a triangle, I'm telling you, I've done this with so many clients over the years. I've done it myself. It really works because you're both looking, you become a team instead of competing. And now we're looking for a solution together that maybe we haven't thought of already. Sometimes I've had this particular argument with a lot of clients over the years. Sometimes they choose not to go to private school early and to go for high school. Sometimes they choose the opposite. Private school's earlier and then public school's later, you know, or sometimes they choose one or the other, but there ends up being such a different way because both of you need to be fully on board for whatever the decision is. There can't be any, I told you so later. There can't be any, oh, but I want to go on vacation. Now we have tuition problems. Like you need to just both, like you need to be very aligned with whatever you choose at the end of the day. So no competing, same team, right? No keeping score. All right. Reason number two is that, and you're sitting here right now, you're like, here it comes, because you know what I'm going to say. What am I going to say? Usually it's reason number one, but I'm going to repeat this. You aren't self-aware or mindful consistently enough, right? Remember there's that great TED Talk by Tasha Urich, I think, E-U-R-I-C-H, I'll link to it. Where her research shows that there's two types of people, those who think they're self-aware and those who actually are. And her research shows that 95% of people think they're self-aware, but the real number is closer to 10 to 15%. Uh-huh. So I want to say quickly the difference between self-awareness and mindfulness. If you haven't gotten my boundaries book yet, Boundaries Made Easy, your roadmap to connection, joy, and ease, now this is your call out to do so. I go into greater detail in there all about self. There's a whole chapter on self-awareness, a whole chapter on mindfulness. If you don't want to spend a penny, you can go search for those keywords on my website. But I just want to quickly say that there is a difference between self-awareness and mindfulness. And a lot of people I notice use the words interchangeably or synonymously, but they're really very different. Self-awareness is all about being consciously aware of your feelings, your agendas, and looking to bring those to the surface of your awareness. It's similar to mindfulness in that is that, you know, you become aware of your motives, you know, your thoughts, your desires, but it's really a bigger process of getting to know yourself and figuring out your blind spots. Okay. There's a lot of judgment with self-awareness. There's no judgment with mindfulness. You know, I'm judging, right? I'm judging who I am and what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. With mindfulness, you're just in a moment without judgment. That's the whole definition of that. So, you know, and when you're self-aware, you're really ferreting out, sure, now it is, what you do and don't like about yourself, about how you interact with others. So again, right, absolutely some judgment there. And mindfulness is all about having just that moment-to-moment awareness of your thoughts and feelings, okay? Again, non-judgmentally. So, because really when you're mindful, you're accepting your thoughts and feelings without judging them in any way. And with mindfulness, there's no right or wrong, right? There's no right or wrong way to feel in a given situation, right? Your thoughts are just about what's happening right now. There's no looking back. There's no looking forward. It's just in the moment, okay? So the vast majority of issues you have in all of your relationships, but especially with your partner, because you're not being mindful, even though you might be self-aware. Okay. What is the example? I always give this example because it's a good one. I am painfully self-aware that I have a tendency towards controlling behavior. I know many of you are shocked, right? You controlling, Abby? No. Yes. Right? What do I do every week? I try to control you, right? That's why I love my job. I'm trying to control you. Hold on. Had to blow my nose. Right? So I do. That's when I'm feeling tired, when I'm feeling fearful, I am a control enthusiast, as Gary calls me. I am painfully self-aware of how controlling I am. However, even though I'm self-aware, I still catch myself being controlling quite a bit. And other people catch me at being controlling. My kids, Gary, friends sometimes, right? So that's where mindfulness comes in. When I'm consciously aware of how I'm feeling and what I'm thinking in a moment, I notice my controlling stuff. I notice those thoughts and feelings arise, and I'm able, I can take a breath. I cannot act on them. I can redirect my thoughts back to the moment where all is okay. No lion is about to eat me. My partner, you know, Gary's not in fact acting like my mother, so I don't need to be mad at him. You know, this is where it is. When you're mindful, you're deliberately directing your attention and you're getting off that autopilot and any negative judging thoughts. Okay. You just allow yourself to be present and connected to whatever is happening in the moment. And this, of course, is where vulnerability lives. This is where deeper connection lives. This is where mindfulness brings us closer in our relationships. Okay. Now, again, self-awareness isn't always mindful, but mindfulness is always self-aware. That's a good one. That's a good way to listen to that, right? What I find is that most people tend to be on autopilot all day and they don't realize it. You know, your minds are somewhere else and not on what you're doing. And this makes us, there's a lot of research. I've talked about it before, Matt Killingsworth and other things you can look at, but that this makes us unhappy, this wandering mind. So let me just quickly say the biggest benefits you'll get from being mindful and how that affects your relationships. You'll have fewer arguments because when you're mindful, there's less miscommunications and misunderstandings, right? I'm not reacting to Gary like he's my narcissistic mom. I'm reacting to him like Gary, which means less arguments, right? You give your full attention. It'll help you notice when you're reacting to something your partner is saying so that you can slow down. You can give a thoughtful response. It helps you remember what was being said so you can follow up, right? The other benefit of mindfulness is that you'll have less resentment because when we're mindful, we're giving the other person our full attention so our partners feel loved. You know, your coworkers feel understood, your friends feel seen and heard, you know, it's all a beautiful thing. But a biggie when you're more mindful, again, from the research, is that you'll have better overall emotional regulation. And if you think about a lot of the problems with your partner and where relationships fail, you realize a lot of it is in emotional regulation. When we see any interaction as threatening, that fear part of our brain, the amygdala, hijacks the brain into that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn mode. If you don't know what fawning is, I did a whole episode on it. You can go back and listen. It's like codependency on crack. It's like people-pleasing, crazy people-pleasing. So that's when we go on the defensive. When our amygdala takes over, we get into that mode. We get defensive. We say things we don't mean. We shut down. So what we know, again, from the research is that regular mindfulness really shrinks this response from the amygdala. So you're able to act, not react, way more easily. You know, you see the upsetting emotions or thoughts, you have more distance, you have less attachment to them. We call this metacognition, when you're almost like a third person looking down on what's happening. You develop this ability to not react to every emotion you have, right? Or thought you have. It's amazing. Another way it really improves your relationships is that mindfulness increases what we call cognitive flexibility. This means that, so we already said you're less reactive, but you're also able to think better. You're able to problem solve and come up with solutions better. The research shows it kind of neurologically disengages those automatic pathways that were created from any prior learning or, you know, trauma or anything else. And it enables you to integrate input in the moment. And that's what you want. And that is, it's really what I'm saying is a fancy way of saying you'll be able to come up with new thoughts about things. How's that? And of course, my favorite, you'll be able to keep your boundaries and not get upset when you're mindful, right? You'll notice if your boundaries trampled in the moment. You'll be able to stop yourself from saying yes when you want to say no. You'll stop being angry or resentful and just take responsibility for how you're feeling and reacting. You'll also be able to stop the guilt or worry you feel after setting boundaries and be able to hold them with more calm, more equanimity, more love. Okay. So, you know, you got to work on your own mindfulness. You know, if you're not working on your own issues, if you're not keeping, focusing on keeping your side of the kind of mental health street clean, you're going to get into trouble. So the more you're focused on what your partner needs to do or what they need to change, the more unhappy you're going to be. So the more mindful and self-aware you are, the more you'll be able to manage your emotions, resist the urge to say that awful or mean thing. You'll be able to act, not react, when things aren't going as you'd wish in the relationship. And this adds up. Think about it. Come on. You can feel it, right? You're going to have more calm conversations, more connection, ease and joy. My favorite things to say, right? What are we all here for? So I just can't say enough about it. And I have my mindfulness starter kit, the meditation starter kit. They're free. You can download them on the shop page or the website. I'm sure we'll have them below the video too, but come on. Come on, people. I'm going to keep preaching until everybody's doing it. Okay. Because it really changes the game. Okay. More than just about anything. And you don't have to meditate. I mentioned the meditation starter kit, but you don't have to meditate to be mindful at all. Okay. And then the third reason, reason number three, the reason the other things don't work, the conflict resolution, the communication tools and all that, right? What's under that is like, again, you're keeping score, you're not acting as a team, right? You're competing, that you are not mindful or self-aware consistently. So you might be practicing, but you're not doing it enough or consistently enough. And or number three is that the biggest thing I see are really different growth rates in a relationship. So I see this a lot. This emotional growth of each person doesn't happen at the same rate. I see people who work on themselves and start getting better. So they start valuing different things. They start asking for different things, but their partners aren't there, or they're not there, at least not yet. Okay. So what happens is that you get busy trying to drag your partner to where you are and they resist. The key is to meet your partner where they're at first. Bond there, connect there first. What do I always say? You need to connect to correct. Your partner isn't going to want to be where you are if it doesn't look loving and attractive, if they just feel wrong. We're getting back into like reasons one and two. So here's what I see a lot. Someone comes to me for therapy. They've been, you know, working on something for a while. And, you know, then their partner isn't there though, right? Because then you go to them with, you know, maybe in therapy, you actually figure out what the real problem is and what's really at stake and what's really going on. You've just been sort of mildly unhappy, but now you're realizing what it really is. So maybe you've been working with me for, you know, 4 or 5 months, your partner's over in Blissville, not even understanding what it is. Or maybe you went to a psychiatrist and got some meds. So they're like, oh, that's solved, you know? And you've been working on something for a while. And again, they're like at exit 2 and you're at exit 20 from the highway. And you're asking them in their eyes to go 100 miles per hour to be where you are. And again, they resist because no one likes feeling pushed or told they're wrong or they're doing it wrong or whatever. No one likes being told what to do. You get resistance. If your partner is resisting coming to where you are, they're telling you something. And it's your job to ask questions. Remember, don't sack, don't offer suggestions, give advice, or criticize them. It's your job to ask questions. And again, listen like you're wrong. It's your job again, to try to learn something, not prove something. The example I give a lot is that when I was growing up, I don't think they have them anymore. They're probably illegal on playgrounds. But here in the United States, we had they're little circle things. They're like mini carousels, not with the horses on them. I don't mean like that, but like this little spinning disc. And they had bars. They had like, you know, 10 bars coming like kind of across the disc. And you would spin it and you would jump on, you know, and it's spinning really fast. You try to jump off and you kill yourself. You try to jump on and you kill yourself because it's going so fast with you and your friends, right? You push off the ground and you're going. Or if you're lucky enough to have a parent who would, you know, move it really fast. What's happening is that everyone is on their own disc spinning at their own rate. Okay. So they're spinning at a certain rate, and then you come in and you're spinning really fast and they're spinning slower, and you're asking them to jump off of their carousel and onto yours, but it looks overwhelming. It's like, oh my God, that's going so fast. And you've done this the other way. One of my favorites is like sometimes you often in a couple will have a partner who's kind of more the dreamer and maybe one who's more real, quote unquote, realistic. Everything's realistic, but you get, yeah, that's the ways you label yourselves. I would say with Gary and I'm definitely more of the dreamer. I'm an entrepreneur. Gary's had the same job for many years. He's a steady Freddy guy, ex-military, you know, he's like a steady dude, right? So I'll come in with some, like this happened recently, and I was like, oh, we should buy a house in Portugal. Like Portugal's so cool, and oh my God, right? Because I've been talking to people who have moved to Portugal. I had read something that day about Portugal and how great it is to retire there. There are all these things, right? I'm not thinking of all the. I don't really want to move to Portugal right now. I've got, you know, my kids are too young. They're just getting into college. I want to end up retiring probably wherever they're living with my grandbabies, hopefully one day, right? But it's just this, I don't know, I was excited and I get excited and I was sharing this idea. And after many years together, Gary knows. So what he used to do is like, Portugal, what a crazy idea. We can't do that. What about your kids? What about this? What about that? Right? And just shut it down. Because I come in spinning really fast on my disc. He's there, you know, thinking what's for dinner when I get home, right? He's not spinning on my disc. He's had a long day at work. He's worked out. He's done all these things. And maybe he's, you know, folding laundry or something. He's being pretty mellow. So he's spinning pretty slow. And I come in with all these great ideas. And so, you know, if he tries to, he gets like thrown off, right? But again, he's learned over time because we try to practice what we preach. And we don't do this perfectly. Please know we've had arguments about this kind of stuff. But, you know, normally he sees it for what it is. I'm just spinning real fast on my little disc over there. He doesn't have to worry. He doesn't have to take it personally. He doesn't have to like, oh my God, we can't do that. He doesn't have to be afraid. I think that's really the big thing. Sorry, I'm wiping my nose. He does not have to be afraid. So he's like, wow, Portugal, where did that come from? And, you know, he's smiling. And, you know, he said, tell me, like, what is about Portugal? What are we going to love there? That's literally what he said to me. What are we going to love about Portugal? That's actually what he said. And I can't even explain it. It immediately brought me down a little bit in a good way, not in a bad way, not like, oh, but in a like, oh, like I sort of got back in reality. And I was like, oh, it's this, and the money goes far and this, and it's so beautiful, and the people, and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, I just was like, I said, you know, obviously it's not for now, but one day, you know, one day maybe we can talk about it, whatever I said. And he was fine. You know, that's the different spinning discs. But you can imagine when you come in with bigger stuff, like we need to talk, or I'm really unhappy in this relationship. Though when our partner isn't quite where we are, that we're spun out. And so what I tell people is you really have to slow down your carousel to get them to want to come over, because it doesn't look so threatening, to get on with you, okay? Or you need to go to where they are. It's sort of like if you're both lost looking how to get somewhere. If you just walk off and start to like go to where you think is the best idea, you're going to leave them in the dust, and you're going to get there and be like, oh my God, where'd they go? What happened? You want to walk. If they're slower than you, you walk back to where they are. You talk together. Hey, where do you think we should? You ask questions. Remember, collaborative questions. Hey, where do you think we should go next? Tell me more about why you're thinking to go north instead of south. Tell me more about, you know, oh, is it scary to the north? Tell me what's scary about it. You know, you start talking about it, and then together, that's the triangle, decide what direction to move in. But together, right? Now you've kind of collapsed the triangle in a different way afterwards. So do you see that? That spinning disc thing will really screw you up. I'm just saying. You gotta just sort of get to where your partner is. You have to connect and then think of walking forward together. But I need you to be clear. It might not be a forward path to where you thought you wanted to be. Remember, you're not right. You have to be open to wherever the path leads. And that's really the point of it. Woo. Is that it? Have I said everything I wanted to say? I think I have. I know today was a little longer. I love if you've hung with me all this time. Gosh, I appreciate you so much. I really believe that this is the work you need to do. Again, go to the links, go look at the other research, really get clear. But if you're, especially if you're feeling a little lost right now about why your relationship doesn't feel good, to me, this is the place I want you to start. Obviously, always your own therapy. Obviously, taking into account, you know yourself better than I do. What is best for you ultimately? If you clearly are in a very toxic relationship, I have other podcast episodes on when do you know when a relationship is really over and things like that. Go listen. But if we're just talking about why relationships fail and what to do so that they don't fail in the future, this is for you. All right. Whew. I love you so much. I'm so grateful we're here together. I am very excited to be, oh my gosh, ending our sixth year together. I can't believe I've been doing it this long and I get so much out of it. Believe it or not, I know you write in with all of your beautiful, beautiful comments and letters, and I love them, and saying how much you've gotten from the podcast. And I really get more than you out of it. But that's part of the reason why I get more. I get your letters, I get your DMs, I get your messages, your reviews of the podcast. Thank you for leaving them. Please leave one if you haven't. Please review my books, either of them, if you haven't yet. They really help people find us. Please leave comments. You know, I love to hear from you. It just really fills my heart, lets me know our connection is strong, because to me, it really is, and lets me know I'm on the right path, and I want to just keep doing the podcast. I don't know when it'll ever end. but for me, it's truly always the highlight. All right. I love you so much. If no one told you this week, there is great, great love here for you. Please don't give up on yourself or me or what we're building and what you're building on your own. Okay. I love you. Have a great week, and we'll talk real soon. Thank you for listening to the Relationships Made Easy podcast with wonderful me, Dr. Abby Metcalf. And I've got two quick things to say. Just give me one more minute. First, I love spending this time with you, and I work hard to make sure every single episode is going to help you move from any feelings of frustration or resentment or anxiety to that connected, hopeful confidence. That's always my goal. So if you have any ideas for a future episode or just want to say hi, let me know what the podcast is doing for you. Anything, you can email me at abby@abbymetcalf.com. How simple is that? And the second thing I want to say is, if you like the podcast, you're going to go crazy, crazy for my book. My book is really good. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on Amazon or on my website under the shop section on my website at abbymetcalf.com. It's called Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. And even if your partner will do a thing, the book will still really help you. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.